religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Presents, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints. This is your host, Don Nikoloff, as you heard in the introduction. And today is January 15th on the East Coast, still January 14th on the West Coast. You know the drill in between. We've got a surprise guest on our show tonight. And before I bring this surprise guest on the program, I want to give a small reminder that on January 23rd, there is going to be a special event, and it's going to be held at the Haven in Winter Park, Florida, from 8:30 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. And the Haven is a club that features really great music in the Orlando, Florida area. It's actually in Winter Park, which is a suburb of Orlando. And Fred Badali and his group, Soul Function, will be performing for a Ron Paul rally. This is to bring awareness to the central Florida area and let the people know that Congressman Dr. Ron Paul is running for the presidency of the United States, something that's been kept out of the mainstream media as much as possible. The reason why that's happening, as I often mention on this show, in my opinion, the media is nothing more than a propaganda arm of the government, even of the shadow government, and international concerns. And Dr. Paul is taking a solid stand against doing away with the Federal Reserve, which is nothing but a foreign private corporation. It is not part of the federal government. The name makes it sound that way, and people have been fooled since 1913 to that effect. Also, Dr. Paul has spoken about doing away with the income tax, and so we may be seeing the end of our income tax should Dr. Paul get in there. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to be able to raise money, but the difference between such an administration and the one we currently have is we won't have the embezzlement going on, and everything should be above board. So the interesting thing about this event on January 23rd is that not only will we have live music, but we will have discussions in the break periods of the show. And we will be broadcasting this, all things working out, live on BBS Radio TV. So you should be able to catch that next Wednesday, January the 23rd, from 8:30 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That means it's 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. on the West Coast. And I will be broadcasting from that location also Monday and Tuesday to help promote the show. And I will have Fred Badali on the show, and we're going to talk a little bit about politics and some changes that we're looking forward to having in the election that's coming up later on in 2008. So you'll hear more about that as time goes on. Also, I'd like to remind you to listen in Wednesday afternoon. Of course, listen every afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific time to the Trusted News Trader, the TNT News Hour on BBS Radio, and that's on Station 1. And I'll be doing that show on Wednesday, and it's getting kind of interesting because we're reporting news that you will not hear in the mainstream media, on TV, on mainstream radio, or read about in the newspapers and the things. So definitely tune into that show. Now, I'm going to introduce tonight's guest. I had the great fortune to meet this person kind of in a strange way, in an unusual way, but we made a friendship some 7 years ago, and I went to his state and did a metaphysical investigation of an event that occurred over 60 years ago. In fact, at the time I went, I think it was about 59 years ago, 59 years in the past at that time. And the event was a saucer crash where three aliens were retrieved, and a preacher man went to the location and gave the last rites to these alien beings that were found at the crash site. Now, this was hushed up, and it did come out eventually. In fact, very recently it came out in terms of how these cases are publicized. After going through numerous records, either through the Freedom of Information Act or one particular individual, Ryan Wood, who went into the National Archives and dug up some records, we were able to corroborate that the government at some level had covered this event up, and we're talking about a flying saucer crash in the year 1941. At the time, it was reported to have occurred in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Although when I went there, I located the crash site somewhere outside of there, and we had some interesting things that happened while I was there, and we're going to talk about that case tonight, what is known as the Cape Girardeau case. And with that, I'm going to bring the MUFON State Director from the state of Missouri, Mr. Bruce Wideman. Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
I'm doing just great. Happy to have you here. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has. It's been too long.
7 years, actually. 7 years and what? A month and a half, something like that, right?
Well, when we're talking UFO time, it really doesn't matter because there seems to be no time.
That's true.
Because of infinity, you know, they seem to pop in and out, and I guess you would say we're living the dog's life of only 100 years or less, and those guys seem to be using the Methuselah scale, 900 years to 1,000, and that seems to indicate, at least what I've seen, perhaps the generational abductions of people in a family. It might explain it's the same aliens abducting people in the same family just to check out their genetic. You know, it's like it's that group's responsibility for these people. They're checking them out for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to jump the horse before the cart, but it's good to talk to you, Dan.
Yeah, you're bringing up a good point. I kind of alluded a little bit about the case, and of course, it's a little bit more complex than what I described. But you were thoughtful and kind enough to give me the opportunity to show you that I could come up with some details about the case based on my ability to read maps, and I don't mean just read them like find how to get from point A to point B, but that I could look at a map and kind of tell you something that occurred or locate people or things or events on the map. And we went out to this site, and basically we went right there, didn't we? We got a map, and it was map from the 1940s.
You're going to make it sound as though it was that easy, about like snapping your fingers. We didn't go directly to it, but we went roundabout to it.
Well, we had trouble finding the roads. I mean, that was the problem. The maps were horrible, if you remember.
Yeah, the roads now are not the same as they were back then. And,
yeah.
You know, we kind of used a little logic, too. And I think we found the location, if that's the right way of putting it. And it just so happens that it sure makes a lot of things fall into place.
Mm-hmm. And, now, just to give a little bit of background, and I guess if you allow me to describe what I know, or you know what I came to find out, because as I worked on this case, it became very clear to me the sequence of events, which I really had no clue of when I went down there. Charlotte Mann, who was the granddaughter of Reverend, it was Huffington or Huffman, I'm trying to remember the last name now.
Yes, you're correct so far. And
which name
I
is
have
it?
The same. I have the same recollection you do. It's like it's one
okay.
or the other. It's
okay.
one or the other. It's not right. a major point.
Well, the Reverend from the Red Star Baptist Church. How
yeah,
about that?
That's easy. That's real easy. Yeah.
Okay, he was called in the middle of the night to give the last rites to victims of a plane crash.
Yeah, but let me throw one bit of facts in there. He was a Baptist minister. They don't give last rites. He was called for by the deputy sheriff who came and got him to come and give a blessing. So that was basically it. It was a member of his congregation who knew him and said, yeah, we had a crash out here. We need you to give these poor souls a blessing. And he realized that they weren't human when he got there. Not before.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I remember this, and I still see this in my mind's eye, that I had described to you how two of the beings were let's say, closer to the entrance to the craft, and the craft was open. They were dead, and the third one had been either ejected or had come out of the craft and was still alive. And the description that I read later on, you see, this case was given to Stanton Friedman, and Stanton Friedman passed it on to Ryan Wood. And that's how we became involved in it. And I basically put all the pieces of this case together after I had gone there. I really didn't know all these things. Very, very little information was given to me.
There was another person involved who's a major historical figure in ufology, the late Leonard Stringfield.
Leonard Stringfield, too, yes, that's correct. I think originally the story went to him, is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Now, my take was, as I recall, that the craft was probably taken to what was known as Wright Airfield at that time in Ohio, which is now Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Well, see, I don't know. I don't know where it was taken. There's also a training base that was south of there, I think, where a lot of people were being trained for paratroop or glider training. You know, during World War II, there were things everywhere. My dad was in the Navy, and he got some training in Farragut, Idaho, and I can't figure that out, but it happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the essence of the story was that Reverend, I think it's Huffington, now that I think about it, Huffington went back to his house. He was told, you know, this didn't happen, don't tell anyone in your family, and or else, you know, it was the usual threats that were given to people that had seen things that the government didn't want let out. That night, the FBI opened up an office in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and Reverend Huffington eventually told his family about this, and they kept very quiet. And when his wife was on her deathbed, she told the granddaughter, Charlotte Mann, who eventually came out with the story.
Well, now, that's very close, and there was one other part that you may not have heard, but Charlotte remembers when she was a little girl that there was a picture, and they had seen it many times, but the Reverend and his wife put it away. One of the guys who was on the scene had taken a picture and handed it to him. and they had a photograph.
Yes, well, I haven't gotten there yet.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. I was going to say,
the thing is,
it wasn't like just because she was on her deathbed and she blurted this out. That wasn't it. She was really trying to get her to talk a lot. It was only until her deathbed that she really said, okay. You know, and she talked.
Yes.
But they were threatened.
See, when a person's on their deathbed, you can do things like twist their arm and really get it out of them. But
I don't know.
I'm making light of it, but in essence, yes, she did. She also referred to the fact that she wasn't clear on the date, although I had come up with a date in April of 1941. And something mid-April, she was a little bit unsure of the date, but she said that her sister was born shortly after that. So it would have been in April or early May is what she had said. So
I believe all I remember is that they knew that it was cold, but it was spring.
They just didn't
remember exactly.
Now, an interesting fact, and this is partially what caused the crash, and I had mentioned the weather. I said, I see the weather that night was very rainy, windy, and cold. In fact, there was probably a thunderstorm, and the craft clipped some trees and crashed into the hillside. And you remember where that apartment building was that I said, this shouldn't be here. They built this right on the crash site. It was at the top of the hill when we were having trouble, you know, figuring out how this road wrapped around that area.
Yeah, well, they put a highway through there real close, too.
Yeah,
a highway that wasn't there at that time, but it is now.
Yeah, that was a bit to the northeast, and I think it's about a mile away. But I'm speaking about the general crash area. But I saw the weather that night, and you remember we stopped the car, and I asked, I said, we've got to talk to the lady in that house. And you looked at me like I was nuts, and you said, what do you mean? And I said, there's a lady that lives in that house, and she knows something about this. We can find something out. So Bruce and I pulled up into the driveway and knocked on the door, and the lady's daughter came to the phone. If you remember, she was very rude to us.
I don't think we needed to actually knock on the door because somebody was coming out. Did we knock on the door? I remember somebody came out real quick.
Well, the daughter came out, but I had knocked on the door first, and she came out, and, you know, what are you doing here? And we said, well, you know, we're looking for aliens. And
I don't think we said that.
I'm just kidding. we did, you know, we tried to be as forthright as we could and say, you know, we're doing an investigation on an event that occurred a number of years ago, and we would like to speak to the lady of the house. And she said, well, that's my mother, and my mother's not feeling well, and, you know, who are you? And she became, you know, kind of paranoid. And eventually the lady came to the door, and we were able to talk to her for a little bit. And I had
She was very willing to talk, and then the daughter shut her up.
Yes, the daughter was interfering, yes. And I had asked her if she remembered something about missing six calves. Now, it was just strange that came out of my mouth because I hadn't even thought about it. It just came out. And she said, she pointed to the swale of land that was beside the drive, and she said, you see that gate there? She said, when it rains really bad, she said, if you pull a truck up in there, there's tracks there, and there's a lot of mud. And my husband came back in and said, you know, we're missing six calves. And she said that really upset him because we couldn't tell where they took them from because there were no tracks in the land there beside the driveway. And she said the gate was locked and everything, and we just couldn't figure it out. He was madder than the dickens. And we looked at each other, and we knew that that was the event, that they probably had been abducting their cattle all along. And that particular night, possibly after having picked up the calves, is when that vehicle crashed. But what was interesting is everyone thought it was a plane crash except for those that were there on the scene. And as you mentioned correctly, there was a picture. Ryan Wood had either the picture or a copy of the picture. He was able to reenact the scene with them picking up this alien by the arms and sort of walking it off the...
Now, I don't know if he has the photograph. I think he was in search of the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know that the photograph did exist, and they were trying to find out all the people that would have possibly had, you know, the contact of the photograph, but I don't know if they ever actually retrieved that. That was the last information I had. Now, there have been other people who looked into it, and they never came up with the same conclusions that we have. And they've also put it, like, at a different location there, but I think we got it right.
Yeah, well, the take I had, and I have to say, you know, I have uncanny accuracy with maps. And when we saw the markings on the map that Ryan had sent to us, I just knew that those three spots were all, you know, forming a triangle, and they were all off to the west and too far from the area, too far of a drive. Remember, he said it was a 15-minute drive, and that
was basically what the grandmother remembered the granddad had said.
Yeah.
That he didn't think he was in the car more than like 15 or so minutes.
Mm-hmm. Now, that would have
gotten him... This is 1941, so it would have been different because there was no major highway through there.
Yes. Now, that would have gotten him to Jackson in 15 minutes. And the interesting thing is sometime later, it was several years later, when Ryan Wood said to me, and I sort of pressed him about that, you know, you never acknowledged the site that we gave you. And I said, I'm telling you flat out that it crashed about a mile outside of downtown Jackson, just southwest of the town. And he said that would explain why the Jackson police were in the photograph. So he had some photograph or photographs of that night. Eventually, he was able to acquire something.
I thought he had some testimony that some of the fire department was from Jackson, too.
Well, yeah, that too. Now, I know you made another trip there with a friend of ours, and you were able to try to glean some more facts from the people at the church, who really weren't around at that time. But the second time, what were your impressions? Did you feel
they were really friendly, and they thought that it was pretty interesting, even though they didn't really know anything about it. They said that it was just amazing that so many people would come there and talk to them about that. And, I mean, it was not a closed door. And sometimes when you go, you know, out into the populace and you're not from around there, they don't like to talk to you because you're not from around there. And
yeah.
These guys were pretty friendly. It was very nice.
Now, sometime later, and I'm going to say really it was about 2 years ago or about 5 years after you and I made that visit up there and did our little investigation, I came upon some records that Ryan Wood had posted on his Majestic Documents website. And in one particular aspect of what was the cover-up of the Roswell crash, which occurred in July of 1947, they referred to a crash and there was some disinformation in the document. They said the crash from 41 in southwestern Missouri. Now, that's not southwestern Missouri we're talking about. That's southeastern Missouri.
That's
so
correct.
There was some intentional disinformation to misdirect or mislead somebody who might have come across that. And, of course, there were numerous sentences redacted. But what I found interesting is they left the 41 in there. And so they acknowledged that case in their documentation in the cover-up of Roswell. It was referred to.
Yeah,
so I don't know if you were aware of that document, but Ryan Wood has it on his MajesticDocuments.com website.
I haven't looked today, but
today.
I'm aware of some of that, you know.
Yeah, okay.
There was another interesting, I believe it was an FBI memo. It's probably in the same place, where it says they were talking about the L.A. case. Do you remember that one?
This
is an official FBI memo about, I think it was J. Edgar Hoover, talking about, I believe, a reference to the L.A. case, which they couldn't figure out what the L.A. case was.
That was
somewhere
the Battle
in Louisiana. Well, I have a different thought on it. Doesn't mean that it's right or wrong, but I think that I am more correct than the other assessments.
Uh-huh.
The L.A. case, when you see the document, some people thought it meant Los Angeles. Some people thought it meant Los Alamos. Other people said, no, it's Louisiana. But I have another take. I think L.A., in that reference of that memo, meant live alien. And I'll leave it at that. It's just my interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a location. It's a being.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that memo again and you see that and read it and you'll say, those sly FBI guys. it was J. Edgar Hoover. So. And the really strange thing that gets me going on this one is, you know, before 1941, they didn't have an FBI office in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. After 41, they had an FBI office in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Why? I've yet to get to the bottom of it. I've had many different explanations, but none of them seem to hold up. I'll leave that one alone, too.
Well, I would presume that they had to have an office there to keep a lid on what was coming out. You know, the Sykeston newspaper, and I don't remember the full name of the paper, but that had the obituary of these events, or this event, in it, and it was redacted out of the newspaper. Now, it fit the timeline, too, that I described. That was another interesting fact. It was like the following weekend or within 2 weeks of that event that paper came out. And I had gotten a copy of it, and several other people had it. I think even Charlotte Mann had a copy of it. But the whole, I'm going to guess that they had it on microfiche, at the newspaper, and it was blacked out. So if you went in there to copy anything, there were certain columns that had little obituaries there and little public notices, and the whole center section from the top of the page almost halfway down was completely redacted. Someone had taken a black magic marker and just completely wiped everything out.
I'm astounded. I can't believe that would have happened in America.
Yes, I know what you mean, especially here. Now, you would think that might happen in Haiti or Bangladesh, but not in America.
No. I think it's actually, you know, it's professional people doing a professional job.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, now that,
for laughing, folks.
That was a local event, and there's, I guess you could draw a timeline. I don't on the sheer impact of this program. I don't want to go down the wrong road. Since they now the Roswell event was like, I guess, the hub of the wheel. And most people think, oh, there might have been something in Cape Girardeau. Well, actually, it was 6 years before Roswell. So mm-hmm. when you start investigating the interplanetary phenomena unit, that's pretty wild. There actually was an interplanetary phenomena unit in the military. But they say, oh, that was defunct so long ago, nobody's really interested in that. I think that we would be very interested in all of that, and I would urge people to look into that just to see what they find. They can't.
Well, they also have the Office of Alien Property, did they not? And well, they weren't talking about people from Mexico or, you know. Some,
I don't know. I think that's in there where it's the Foreign Technology Division of another agency. There's some really neat things that we have, and all since your guests don't know who I am, and your audience doesn't really have a clue as to who you're speaking with here.
Wait a second, Bruce.
Guest. I know. Well, you know,
you
those other
listeners.
Guys, those other six guys are listening in. Yeah, I can see you. Yeah, you can bob your head. So yeah, that's me. Don't choke on your coffee. All we want is them to tell the truth. I think people in this country not only can handle it, they have a right to know.
Mm-hmm.
You think about these laws that say, you know, our secrecy laws where anything over 25 years old should be made accessible to the public. It's not being made accessible. Is someone not hearing that? They're like going, yeah, thank God. They're protecting the secrets. Well, not all of these things need to be that secret. You know, don't let the, you don't have to tell everybody about the, teleportation units, the over-unity things, the intergalactic stuff, but at least let people know that contact's been made. And maybe, It's like what we're hoping for over in Israel, that perhaps their next-door neighbors can finally get along with each other without you can live long enough without killing each other to find some semblance of civilization. Well, my goodness, our planet needs to just quit killing each other long enough to be able to reach out and say, hey, you guys from this other place, what's going on? I'd be afraid of us too. Don't give them the big weapon. Look what we did with atomic power. We just learned how to fry people. It's like we need to do things as a planet. We can come together and do this stuff. And I'm not talking communism. I'm talking United States type of democracy. I mean, we can do it. It's just a matter of putting our priorities out there. And actually, if we have a little more information coming from our government, I think we would be a lot happier. I wouldn't mind paying my taxes if I knew I was supporting the next wave instead of going to a country here on Earth to, police and shoot people, that we were going to another planet and do some exploring. I think that would be so cool. So I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, man.
No, that you're making a very valid point. Number one, we have the military-industrial complex, and everything that they do, and I say the government, everything they do is catering to the profit side of the military-industrial complex. And on a global scale, all of these countries that are under the thumb of this shadow government and the secret societies are spending all their money on fomenting war, but they don't address the issue that many of us know about, and that's they're here already. And there's a plan, there's a very sinister plan to take the planet over completely, and so we are bombarded with all these excuses of, well, you know, those of us that know what's going on in ufology, well, we can't tell the people because it will shatter the paradigm of religion and they won't be able to handle that. Or it'll cause a complete collapse of society. Well, you know, we are more mature and more discerning than that for them to make those decisions about us. In fact, they're so power hungry and so into controlling us that they refuse to let the information out, and you have a large number of people. The majority of people are saying, well, these people are all nuts that think this stuff, but try to tell that to someone who's been abducted. Try to tell that to someone who has seen these craft their whole lives or been visited by beings and had communication with them. So it's not a question of national security. It hasn't hurt national security that these people have come in contact already or that they've been abducted. But what we resent most is being lied to, and the silly, idiotic, or childish excuses that they're giving for it. Do you agree with that, or am I being too hard?
I see some of what you're saying as being accurate. I see everything, including the ruse of national security, as being a cover story. You get a cover story for this and a cover story for that, and pretty soon people, you know, they don't see any of the truth. They just see, and there's another cover story. It's like you not acclimatize, but you desensitize once you see somebody getting murdered like every day. It's no big deal, you know. It's like it's just not right. And when you muddy the waters with disinformation, it's hard to see the bottom of the pool, man. I mean, it's just like Roswell, 1947. Oh, you know, what's the official government line? Well, let's see. Back in the 50s, we were throwing some dummies with some parachutes. That's what they saw, even though it was 10 years earlier. No, they just can't remember when they saw it. You know, what the hell? People are not that stupid. And then you drive down the road and you're thinking, well, maybe people are that stupid, you know? And it's like, you know, most people are not that stupid. 80% of the population is pretty much okay. You got that 10% on either side, you know, like people that won't believe anything no matter what anybody says. And then the other 10% is they'll believe anything anybody says. Well, that's not the norm. That's the exception. And then you have people like SETI. My friend Stan Friedman says, silly effort to investigate. SETI. My goodness. They just got millions of dollars from the guy that started Microsoft to listen to the radio in case somebody's calling. Oh yeah, right. Why don't you look at, you know, spend one of those millions of dollars into looking at some of the documentation of the stuff we've had since Roswell or before. I just don't understand. You see these crazy NOVA programs on TV where they want to give you both sides, and what they basically are giving you is both sides of their mouth. They're just, you know, it's like, well, if you want to believe, that's okay, but you're stupid. But then again, there might be something out there. And by the way, here's a commercial for another, you know, product. And it's like, you're not getting anything. They're not educating our children. It's sad. They're not educating anyone. They're like disinforming everyone.
And that's what propaganda is, right?
I'm hoping one day people will see things kind of the way I see it, which is, you know, get rid of the crap. Let's talk turkey, man. Let's see what's really going on here. If there's nothing to UFO secrecy, if there's nothing to UFOs, then why is all this classified information out there? What are they guarding? If there's nothing to it, why? What happened? I don't think it was a Mogul balloon in Roswell. I really don't. I don't think anybody with an intellect or an IQ over 2 says, oh, yeah, it was a Mogul balloon. That was it.
Yeah, and they said the aliens were crash dummies. And then, you know, of course, years later, wasn't it 8 years later that they said it was crash dummies?
It was longer than that.
Well,
it was not that long ago. And then you have people that are running for president. That's going on right now. Hey, vote for me. I'll look into the alien stuff. We've heard that before. You know, Jimmy Carter, a president, before he was elected, he says, when I get into the White House, I'll release the UFO information. He gets into the White House, and the first thing they tell him is, you shut up. You're not doing anything like that because you don't have the need to know. And same thing happened with several other presidents, and we'll just leave it at that. I'm not gonna. Uh-oh, what did I do?
I don't know. It sounded like you sent out a an electronic pulse beam or something.
Either that or I'll let you decide what that is. It's somebody trying to say, "Oh, that's you. You're playing your ukulele, aren't you?"
No, it's my harmonica.
Oh, okay. No harm harmonica, I hope.
It's funny you mention presidents, because what comes to mind is, and I heard this story firsthand from Kenny Young, who was from, I think, the Erlanger, Kentucky area. But
I don't think he's alive anymore.
No, he passed away a few years ago.
Right.
He was trying to do some of the work that Leonard Stringfield had been doing, and you're quite familiar with Leonard. Kenny told me the story about Jackie Gleason having asked President Nixon about this alien thing, and after a golf game, Nixon took him to a base where there was an alien in a freezer or something. He didn't really go into too much detail about the state of what it was in, but let's say it was in suspended animation.
Want me to tell you the base?
And are you going to say Homestead?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, I would guess it would be Homestead. Jackie Gleason was never the same. And he had interviewed Jackie Gleason's wife about this particular story. That was one of his landmark interviews that he had done. And when you think about the fact that Nixon sort of got a kick out of this, to see this, and it really devastated him. He was never the same person again.
I don't know what that is, do you?
No. This is the first time I've heard something like that. Sounds like they're playing ping pong on the phone line or something.
No. The Close Encounter of the Third Kind is supposed to go do-do-do-do-do. They ain't quite got it yet. They're trying to break in and communicate with. It must be Sadie. But you are absolutely correct. And Jackie Gleason was never so upset as that. And he was one of the few people. Believe it or not, I follow a little bit about Jackie because he and I had the same birthday. Although he was older than I was, we still had the same birthday. That's a commonality.
Hmm.
And he had the largest occult library in the United States. The guy was fascinated by the things that he couldn't see. And I'm sure he was, according to his wife, he was never so upset as to when he came home after being out with Nixon playing golf, you know, and then he talked about it. He told her. But, you know, I don't know what's in Homestead anymore because remember they had that awful hurricane went right over it and cleaned it up. I'm sure that stuff was all underground.
The scuttlebutt now is that it's used as a drug base. And
I don't know.
Oh yeah, I mean they've discovered drugs there, so tons.
I'm not into that. I mean, shoot, man.
Well, I'm not either. But
I know, but it's
that's
like
one of the things you come up with when you're researching. You find these things out.
I understand, so. And it's just like I said. You know, I'm not. There are conspiracies of conspiracies of conspiracies. And some of them are true and some of them aren't, but you know, when they have the professional disinformation guys, and I'm not just talking about you six out there that are listening in, there's a lot of other guys out there doing that stuff. And by the way, stop by, we'll have coffee again sometime. Go visit Don, he likes that. He'll have coffee with him. The only thing is, you don't want to have coffee with them while they're pouring concrete on your feet and tying you to a chair. That's the bad coffee. That's the bad coffee. You don't want that kind of coffee, man. You got to play Todd Rundgren's song, "The Last Ride." That's not what you want to do. Hey guys, I won't do it anymore. Yeah, we're going to make sure of that, boy.
Well, you brought up another point. You know, you brought up we talked about the Roswell case. Several of our mutual friends have told us that they're aware of a case in Tennessee that occurred in 1938, and that case to some extent is documented, as well as Jim Marr's writing about the Aurora, Texas crash of 1899. Now, throughout the world's history, there are documented cases. Some of it's found in hieroglyphics. Some of it's found in paintings, religious paintings. We know that this has been going on forever, as long as mankind has been on this planet. But the government is still floundering about coming to some conclusions. I had, a couple of years ago, I read a report from the Air Force, and it was something that was their official word from 1994. Someone had sent me this document, and I read the explanation that basically they were saying there's nothing about UFOs that the Air Force doesn't understand. And I thought that was a strange comment to make. You're saying they don't exist, but there's nothing about them that you don't understand. And then they said, as far as whether or not there was a crash at Roswell, even the researchers can't agree on the date when it happened. Well, for crying out loud, you're lying about when it happened. What do you expect researchers to think? You know, at every step of the way, they tried to cover it up.
Well, it's a cover story. It's lawyer talk. And when you get not that long ago, we had a president that wasn't guilty because nobody could figure out what the definition of is was.
You know? Or is. I think it still is, isn't it?
Well, it's like,
or you'd have to say
we're not all that way.
What the definition of was.
Yeah, or was is. Is you is or is you ain't. So I'm telling you, the future looks very bright. Not everybody is in despair, and we're certainly not going to just sit around and do drugs and let everything happen. Some people actually are looking into the facts, the history. And there's a hidden history. And you were talking about some of the ancient things. I don't know how much longer we've got here, but one of the things I've given in one of the classes that I taught here in the Missouri area, I teach community college classes. We had a person who says, well, where did they go? Where did they come from? And it's like, I said, well, now, if I had those real answers, don't you think I would be able to produce something more than this class? And I said, I want you to know this. This is something you can find out on your own and see if there's more to it than what you think. Let's say you're an alien group and you come to planet Earth, and it just so happens you happen to come here. We're using Methuselah time. And you just happen to come here, and the planet is a bunch of prehistoric animals, and it's a bunch of muck, and you're going, hey, let's set up our science experiment and watch the ant farm. So what they do is they set up a scientific observation and watch the planet Earth grow. And I'm going to jump forward. Now, if you happen to have an 8-inch telescope or better, 3 days before to 3 days after a full moon coming up the rest of your life, you can do this every time there's a full moon, look at a crater basically in the middle of the moon. There's a little bitty one called Bruce, my name, and it's north of that. It's called, what's it called? It's called
Don.
No. it just went out of my head. Oh, no, they're bombarding me with thoughts. Well, I'll think of it in a second. But the thing is, if you look into this, I want to say Icarus. That's not it. You're a lot of help psychically tonight. I'll think of it in a second. But in this crater, it's a crater that has a dark, perfectly equilateral triangle in it. And it's very strange that that's there, because it's not supposed to be there. It's a man-made, well, I shouldn't say man-made, it's a made structure. And you can see this anywhere on Earth if you have an 8-inch telescope or better, 3 days before a full moon to 3 days after a full moon. And, oh my gosh, I got a moon map over here. If I walk over, I can probably find it. It's been a rough day. Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you. Now, the crater that's named Bruce, I was unaware of that. Is that one of these mail order gifts that you received, that somebody named that crater after you?
I cannot believe the insanity of somebody doing that. That is sad. That is so sad. No.
Like naming the stars and everything.
Yeah, no, I disagree with anybody doing that. If you only knew the light that I was looking at this one, this is so sad. That doesn't even show. Boy, that's going to be a reason for him to contact you in the future. I'm going to think of it as soon as we're done with this program. It's going to come right to me. Well, anyway, it's there. What's that one called? Oh, I can't see a name. When you get a little bit older, it's hard to see things that are printed like ants.
Well, if you can't find it tonight, Bruce, don't fret. The next time we have you on, okay, maybe you'll have the answer for us, and we'll begin the show with that.
Okay, well, there really is one, but all I was going to say is, if you're the alien scientist and you're inside that crater, where else and anywhere could you sit there and watch the Earth go by every 24 hours? It's like a perfect student-teacher relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You get to watch the Earth grow up and maybe influence it occasionally. You know, oh, there's Alexander the Great. He needs some help. Let's go knock down a wall. You know, it's just very interesting that these guys have been around maybe as long as we have. And I'll think of it in a second. Go ahead. I know that's so crazy. I can't believe I can't remember the name of that place.
Well, maybe by the next time you're on the show, you'll have found it, and you can share it with our listening audience. In the meantime, we're about out of time, Bruce. But I wanted to give a quick shout out to a couple of people: Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, and Jill, and the General, and also Marianne, Michael, Diane, John, and Kastara, to name a few. And, of course, we want to thank our engineer, Seth, as well as Donald at BBS Radio for making the show possible and for staying up so late at night and doing such a great job on the sound. I thought it was very good tonight. Hopefully you heard me well as well, Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You're coming in clear in Missouri.
Okay. The next time we have you on, I think I want to go in a couple of different directions and maybe talk a little bit about the work of Leonard Stringfield. Would you be into that at all?
Well, sure. Len was a great guy. And there's another thing I'd like everybody to get a chance to watch, a movie called They Live. That'll change your view. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. I've seen the movie a couple of times, in fact. You know, all of these movies, you know, even Alien, if you've seen that, or Alien 2, there are a lot of little tidbits of information that come out in those movies that seem to go along with a lot of the general scuttlebutt that's out there about ufology in general and the technology. I think definitely we're in all those areas. Now, the monster itself, I don't know who, you know, which politician that would be, but maybe it's just representative of politics altogether.
It's like Forbidden Planet. What a great
yeah.
movie. Strange movie, but a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And The Day the Earth Stood Still. Oh, yeah. Things like that.
Yeah, they've been showing that movie a lot recently, in fact. I guess there's an eeriness about it, you know. I remember seeing it as a kid, and Mike, there was something spooky about Michael Rennie. I still haven't put my finger on it, but
it's time for Mr. Carpenter.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, I want to thank you for being on the show, and hopefully I can pin you down now and say, will you come back again and pay us
sure,
a visit?
It's good to be had.
Okay. Well, we enjoyed having you.
Okay.
And I want to thank the listening audience out there for tuning in, and thank you for listening to Evident Footprints. Our guest tonight was Bruce Widemann, State Director of Missouri MUFON, and we'll have him back again soon, and we'll continue this discussion and take it in some different areas, and by then he will have found the missing crater near the crater Bruce on the moon.
It's north. It's north of that crater. I just
it's north.
It right
okay.
Now. If it was earlier, I would know.
All right. Maybe I'll come up with it, and I'll call you up and tell you.
All right.
In the meantime, folks, have a good night. Peace, love, and light, and we'll see you tomorrow. We've got some great guests coming up this week, so be sure to tune in. Good night.
Thanks
now.
A lot.
Good night.
Bye.